Resident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprint on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this December the 10th on the West Coast, now December 11th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to welcome all those around the world in the U.S. military that are listening to us on Wind Talkers Radio Network and on blogtalkradio.com on the internet. And we got a great show lined up for you tonight. Tonight's guest is a former U.S. Marine from 1967 through 1977. And he has his own radio show on the two networks I just mentioned, Wind Talkers and Blog Talk. And he is also a researcher, a writer. He's an expert in electronics, something I think he picked up when he was in the U.S. Marine Corps. And he's dabbled in a little bit of everything, you could say, in the business world. He's been quite successful throughout his life, taking upon himself the responsibility of delivering the truth to people around the world. And he keeps in very close touch with his friends in the U.S. military who are waking up to the truth about what's going on. Our guest also has his own radio show called A Marine's Disquisition, and I've been his Monday night guest for a number of months now, and he's becoming my regular Thursday night guest, although we've moved him around a little bit just so we don't stay too predictable. Anyway, he's with us tonight, and it is Thursday night, or depending on the part of the world you're in, it's also Friday. My good friend, Drew Malone Raines III. Drew, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. It is one more day above dirt around here.
Oh, I heard that. I heard that.
You know, we're doing our dastardly deed here, educating people as we do our research. And many people, they that know me, come up and ask, you know, how do I educate my cousin, or how do I educate my brother or sister or uncle or aunt, mother, father? My father is got millions or hundreds of thousands of dollars, and all I can say is some people just refuse to prepare for their own defense, thinking that the United States government and the military or the law enforcement will be miraculously available and trustworthy to aid them in their moment of despair. Over half the homes in America that have firearms or for self-defense don't have enough ammunition. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Don't have enough ammunition.
Gazoon height.
No, I have a cough switch on my other headset, and I didn't have time to get it hooked up. I apologize.
Oh, that's okay.
You know, they're, these homes, they don't have enough ammunition to go into all their guns. Or some of them just have one round for each gun, and that's it. I worry about them in this regard, that they think they're preparing, but as our nation as a whole, but I've learned that, and I've researched, that there has never been in the history of man an unarmed people, a defenseless people, who has ever been able to obtain freedom and independence. It's always the nations that are bent on personal survival, personal responsibility that have risen out of the darkness and come forth to take hold to bring freedom and independence to a nation. Sometimes it's just 13%. Just in the latest and the very last example that a nation rose out of the slavery, rose out of the despair, rose out of the wilderness, was the United States of America. The United States of America was armed. The people were not defenseless, but over 78% ignored the calamity of the 1760s and the early 1770s. Everything that led up to the independence of the United States away from England, where the colonies became individual republics, came about from the despair and the wars of the European countries that were brought over to the North American continent.
Mm-hmm.
The French were here, uniting with the Indians, fighting the British and the Spanish, and the Spanish were fighting the British and fighting the French. Many people think that that America, the Republic States, only had one war. They forget about the French Indian War. They forget about the Spanish War galleons of the early 1600s and 1700s, especially those of the 1700s. People just have got to realize that only 13% of the men and less than one half of 1% of the total number of women in the United States supported and fought for the independence of the 13 republic states. 13% of the men, less than 1% of the women. It's mind-boggling to realize that people do not realize that God's grace came on these colonies, these independent republic states, because of men like George Washington, who believed in the Lord Almighty God, who believed in Yeshua, Jesus the Christ, who believed in the Ten Commandments, who knelt down and prayed feverishly 2 and 3 times a day. And because of the men that sat down and prayed every day and fought and died, a great nation was born. Here we are, 235 years later, from the first real step, and 234 years from the first battles, and 233 years after the Marine Corps had its first battle against the British. And there were no French helping the United States. The French did not get involved with the colonies to help the colonies because of their hatred to the colony and the militia who had defeated the French in the French Indian War. There was still a lot of animosity there. The Europeans brought the wars of Europe to our shores. George Washington warned us about those wars in his farewell address. And here we are, 210 years later, ignoring George Washington, ignoring George Washington's vision, and we're allowing the European nations to drag us into their wars. And they've been fighting these wars for over 8,000 years. Since the dawn of time, they've been fighting in Afghanistan. it amazes me, Don, that those of us in Louisiana, especially at C.E. Byrd High School, had the opportunity to be taught by one of the greatest American history teachers that I personally have ever known, or even investigated, or respected, or looked at. She wrote no books. She became no icon in the annals of education. Mattie Mae Brown is remembered as the older lady that walked the halls with her beautiful white gloves that came up above her elbow, reminiscent of the 1930s aristocrat. She was a millionairist. She inherited her money from her father. She traveled the world, but she brought her travels back to us, her students. And yet no one outside of C.E. Byrd High School remembers Mattie Mae Brown and the fact that she taught us about the world and the fact that the world hated America. The world did not hate us in the sense of the two boys on the battlefield out there at the school grounds fighting it out over the blood or the brunette. It was hatred of jealousy that we had so much that we could go to the grocery store and find grapes there, or go to the grocery store and find canned beef at any time, or shop for fresh oranges, or have loaves of bread for 10 cents a loaf on Tuesday, pick up ice cream in the dead of winter on the hottest day of the summer. The world was jealous of what we had in the fact that we could live peacefully from the ocean to the ocean. And yes, we have our American Indians, and yes, we had our travesties with the American Indians. And yes, many of us know that our government treated the American Indians terribly. Wars with the American Indians were not caused by the American Indians against the white man. They were caused by the European greed of the elitist in power. The American Indians just fitted back and stepped back. There was enough land to go around. But here we are, 200 and basically 30 years from our formation, and we're allowing ourselves to be involved in wars in Europe and in the Middle East. Alexander the Great took one look at Pakistan and conquered it in a day. He got to the land of Afghanistan and saw nothing but desert and mountains and rocks and scorpions and disease and hatred. Even the men had disrespect for their own daughters. Here we are, 4,000 years later, and they're still fighting in Afghanistan. And the men of Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iraq, still to this day, have little moral respect for their daughters or their wives. America has gone through a transition. It was wrong to have slavery after the 1775 war. But greed kept it there. Mattie Mae Brown, illustrious lady of the South, a real Southern belle, stood forth and taught her students for years that the war of Northern aggression was not about slavery, but was about taxation. And she felt in her heart that the war was lost. Here we are, 45 years later, and we're about to go into a civil conflict here in America because our government has overspent itself. And we've got the extended TARP program that has billions of dollars out there. We've got money being lent to banks in the form of billions of dollars. The term billion in the 60s was never mentioned. It was just the next word up. And the word trillion, you never heard the word trillion.
Oh, I agree with
that. In the 1960s.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, Drew, if I may say something.
Please.
It seems like it was only a year ago, I can recall a few congressmen and a few senators complaining that they weren't going to vote for this bill and they weren't going to vote for that bill unless George W. Bush balanced
the budget.
Okay, which is a farce. The term doesn't even mean anything. You know, they're not balancing any budget. And today, this evening, I heard the same kind of speech coming from the halls of Congress. And it was reported on Fox Radio. And not that I sit around listening to Fox Radio at home, but I was in my car, and they handle the commercial breaks on the station I was listening to.
That's how I get Fox Radio.
Yeah. And they said they were about to pass some legislation on some minor issues, and some of these congressmen and senators were upset because the deficit is not balanced, and it was $12 trillion. Now, several years ago, I came out, as you well know, I've come out and I've talked about $1 trillion. How long it takes to count to a trillion? 31,710 years. Don Harkins calculated that one day. My calculator doesn't go up that high. You have to add bunches of zeros on the end of whatever you're calculating.
I start with zeros.
Yeah, so, well, so does the government. And they end with zeros. But, you know, people were saying, I remember sharing this with Frank Whalen. Oh, he said, oh, this sounds like a fairy tale. I said, I assure you, it's not. And now they're throwing it about. Now you hear it on AM radio. And do you think people really know what it means? You see, you're hitting the nail right on the head, Drew, in what you were saying, is that the kids today have been dumbed down. Their parents have been dumbed down. And this goes back 3, 4, 5 generations, actually. You know, it goes into our generation. It goes into our parents and our grandparents' generation. They were struggling through life just to survive, to raise their families, to try to have some semblance of a quality life. And all the while, this plot was going on behind the scenes to destroy this country. And we're at the point now where we see it. You mentioned firearms, for which are legal. People have a right to bear arms, according to the Constitution. And when you describe people having one round per firearm, what you're in essence saying, well, I have the right to protect myself. I have the right to own a gun and protect myself, and I'm going to protect myself a little bit. You know, you have to be a darn good shot and hope that you only have one situation when you only have one round. It's pretty meaningless, isn't it? It's like having a round and no firearm.
Exactly.
And I see the apathy out there. People are easily diverted. Their attention is easily diverted to the most meaningless of things. And I suppose, you know, that some people came here just to experience that they can't be expected to to get serious about life because it never was their intention. And we feeling the passion that we do to awaken our fellow Americans and to awaken other people around the world, too, to tell them, look, we know what we have for a government because we've seen it elsewhere. We know what we have. Now, do the masses, do the majority of us know that? No, they do not. Just like in these other countries, there were people that I met when I lived in Europe that hadn't traveled down the mountain where they lived. They didn't even know the name of another town that was at the base of the mountain where their town was. That's what a sequestered, cloistered life they had. And it, I couldn't imagine it. Here I was on the other side of the world. You know, I had traveled. And maybe it wasn't their desire, maybe it wasn't their fortune to do that, but it's a sign that this is everywhere, that people are so intent on focusing on their little microcosm of existence that they fail to see everything else there is to see. And the world is an incredible place. It's a beautiful place. You could say it's an incredibly beautiful place, what we haven't destroyed, you see. But we're at the point where we're destroying everything and we're given promises that things are going to get fixed and the corruption just keeps going on. On and on and on. And the agenda is to subjugate us or outright kill us. Imagine they have a population reduction agenda to form their new world order. And with 6.7 billion people on the planet, and that number is always going up, and despite the number of people that are killed in wars and killed by intentionally created biological weapons and diseases, they still have this need to reduce the population of the regular people on this planet to 500 million, something that can be managed. Now, at the same time, they're saying we have to fix the planet, but their solution to fixing the planet is to murder billions of people. And it amazes me how people can't see this. They can't hear this, and somehow it doesn't compute in their brain. And I know you feel the same frustration when you think about that, when you try to communicate with these people. Some of those people listen to our shows. Some of these people send us email, and we hear about them through the grapevine via the people that we meet and come into contact with. But like the 13 colonies that represented the 13 Illuminati families, by the way, and run by via remote control from England at our country's inception, the way this country has transformed from this oppression from overseas to, let's say, the independence of the states, and then the decision to collectivize the states to be a singular power, was never intended to be subjugated by the government. The government was always to be of service to the people, was it not?
That's true.
Okay. And yet, this is allowed to happen, and it's happening at an ever-quickening pace, and We are called names, and we are harassed, and we are threatened, and we are murdered, those of us that speak the truth. But like the 13 colonies, when they fought the British, and they did get help from the French, and they got some help from the Indians as well, because the Indians knew who the bad guys were, it was a very small percentage of the people that were living in the 13 colonies that actually defended the country, wasn't it? Just like today. It's no different.
And no, it's a little different out there because we've got people today that have got the education that are receiving the data from you, from the shows that are on BBS radio, that are out there attempting to bring the truth that you bring forth every night, Monday through Friday, in certain parts of the United States of America, and Tuesday through Saturday in other parts of the world. And people just, their apathy walks away. They just ignore the truth, or they hear the truth and they prepare. And I worry about this, Don. I really, truly worry and pray about this, because our nation as a whole is basically defenseless. And I'm wondering, and many times I worry at night when I don't sleep, if the masses will be ready for what's coming. Many people out there that are listening to your show nightly and listen to my show daily and listen to others around the United States that are on talk shows, I fear for those of you that are listening now who have seen a smidgen of the light, but they don't really understand the full preparedness effort that is needed. And will there be enough time, Don, for those that have got what we, you and I, personally have prepared ourselves for before they really have to rely on the little bit of stuff that they have? I have a personal friend, Don, just exactly what you're saying, who has a pressure cooker. I got him to get a big stainless steel American 100% pressure cooker, bought at an auction for a food warehouse that was had gone out of business. He was able to buy what normally would cost $125. He bought it for $45, one of about 10 that were sold. $45 for a $125 pressure cooker. Why? Because you take a pressure cooker, build an open fire, I don't care where the water comes from, you put it in there and you boil it, you have steam come out of the top through the hole, and you, with a little education and the schematic that I gave him, and I posted the schematic up there for others to see, to make distilled water out of swamp water. And yet there are people out there that have not tried any of their storage food that they've bought. They bought it and they stuck it in their basement or stuck it in their attic or stuck it in the back room. They've never even pulled a package of survival food out to see how to prepare it. Not even a can of beef from Daryl Dickinson, who is one of the people I truly support. It's pre-cooked beef in a can, 5-year shelf life. Some friends have bought some. I've got one friend that has bought 8 cases and has not opened one case, not one can, to see what's needed to cook it. It doesn't take rocket science. Thank God it's already pre-cooked. But what about freeze-dried food? Has anybody bothered to think about buying some and opening it up and eating it and learning how to use it now?
Yeah, because you're not going to have time to figure it out later on.
And where are you going to get the water if you don't have a way to boil water into steam, and the steam's converted back to water? That's how you make distilled water, people. People think that, oh, I have a Berkey. Well, a Berkey requires filters. How many extra filters do you have?
And when you start, have you used a Berkey water filter as your sole source for water? The limitations for a Berkey water filter are enormous. You can make distilled water with a steam pressure cooker in less than an hour. You have got to learn how to. How many of you out there have picked up the phone and called me or Don or any of the other talk show hosts out there and said, where do I find information to build a stove if the power goes out? And there's ways, means, and materials to build a brick oven. And if those people that have taken the time, that are extremely few, like Maddie Mae Brown once told us in a classroom, you better know an American Indian that knows how to cook in a brick oven and build a brick oven. If the power goes out, how to make a loaf of bread in a brick oven? You hear the advertisements, Don, about brick oven pizzas.
Oh yeah.
But you go out there and you find a brick oven pizza, and what do you have? You have a brick oven pizza with natural gas or electric. Well, what happens to that brick oven pizza when you have to make that brick oven when you have to throw wood in the fireplace?
Yeah,
they're not designed for that.
Yeah. Or to build a fire in general, you know. Do you have firewood stored up, you know?
Do you have matches?
Yeah.
Do you even know how to start a fire? There's one for you. How many people out there have a magnifying glass and know how to use it to start a fire?
I'm holding my hand up, but you can't see that on the radio.
Oh, but yeah. Glass, how many people out there know how to get the proper kindling, and the proper utensils to start a fire from scratch without a magnifying glass? How many people even know what flint looks like, or how to use flint, or mortar and pestle? Or what a mortar and pestle is, and how to use them. The simple measures of mortar and pestle. People look at me like, "What, a mortar and pestle?" You know, a mortar and pestle has been used for 8,000 years, ladies and gentlemen, to grind in the flour, to grind up herbs for the master herbalist. Used by the pharmacies to grind up prescription ingredients. There won't be any prescriptions, ladies and gentlemen, in the near future. Do you think there will be prescriptions out there, Don? Do you think there's going to be enough pharmacies with enough prescriptions in the counter to take care of the masses that are going to be injured in the upcoming war? And what about our military? How much of the military is going to come over on the people's side? I dare say there's going to be a very large number, but they're not going to be organized.
And they're probably not going to be.
They're going to be so disenfranchised because there are so few leaders who are willing to stand up and die.
They want to retire and collect their pension. That's what we hear from the people.
Exactly. And, you know, one of the things I hear is, well, I'm going to move over to Belize and take my retirement. If I can find a way to get my retirement and have it posted in a bank that I can trust. By the way, is there a bank I can trust? I'm going to move down to Belize and I'm just going to let them fight it out. Well, wait a minute. Who's going to fight if you go to Belize? Who's going to fight if all of you guys expatriate yourself? You think these numbnuts out here that are so stupid now are going to stand up and wake up because they're walking out there to tea parties are going to fight? They haven't even got enough bullets for their weapons to go through one good fight on a burglar. Ladies and gentlemen, I worry about you. I pray for you. I don't even know you. There are people that are out there right now, Don, and you know them. They sit in their luscious cars, traveling back and forth to work. Or they work in the informational freedom networks and talk about or help assist in getting people on the air, on the radio, to talk about the evils of what's coming, and yet they themselves don't prepare properly. They haven't opened a can of freeze-dried food to know how to cook it, or a can of beef or pork or turkey that's pre-cooked and know how to use it. They haven't learned how to eat the proper foods and what not to eat with proper foods. I personally just learned, after 62 years on this planet, as a human being, because I was a spirit before I became a flesh and blood person on this planet. God, the spirit, was put into the baby, and I came forth, and for 62 years, I did not know that you should not eat potatoes with steak, or potatoes with beef, because of the acidic of the potato. I learned it on my own radio show Tuesday of this week. And then I learned that there's a lot of foods that you should not commingle when you eat, because it's bad for your digestion. It's bad for your posture. It's bad for your belly. It puts all the cellulite on your legs for the ladies, the fat in the belly for the men. Ladies and gentlemen, take a good hard look. Pull the pictures of your ancestors out. Those of you that are 20 pounds overweight, 40 pounds overweight, 80 pounds overweight, look at your grandfathers. Look at the pictures, if you're fortunate enough to have pictures of your great-grandfather. You will not find fat people. Look at the pictures from the Old West. Show me one fat person in the Old West. Even the major movie theaters of today will slap in a bunch of fat people, especially a Chinaman. But in true life, most people were 5 to 10 pounds below the proper weight because of malnutrition. And those that were super healthy were super slender. How many of you walked, gone to the grocery store and sat there at the front door and just sipped a cup of coffee? Or drink a soda or a glass of orange juice, which is what you should be drinking, and watch the number of people come through the store that are extremely overweight. And the majority in the South are black. When I heard the term obesity, I thought obesity meant people that were 200 or 300 pounds overweight. But I see some of these women out there that weigh 250 pounds that are 5'3".
Or 5'2".
They look like a rubber ball rolling down the street, but with two legs. Todd?
Mm-hmm.
Where are we going? You know, do we really care as a nation? No, I don't think so.
Yeah, it's, you know, you and I and many other guests on this show have talked about responsibility, you know, personal responsibility. Ultimately, each one of us, you hit the nail on the head. You know, you described yourself, and you're not unlike me or anyone else on this planet that is human. We all were born of spirit into the flesh for the purpose of experiencing and making life choices. Making choices with a conscious understanding of the implication, the accountability, the responsibility that goes with those choices. And when we fail to recognize our own responsibilities and make our own choices ourselves, when we hand that task over to someone else, like a government, that's license to steal, that's license to corrupt, that's license to maim or torture or to expose to disease and all kinds of hardships and other elements, because it's the opposite of spirituality. Those that would do that to someone else, they do it with no concern of the consequences. And yet, one of the unwritten or unspoken laws in terms of universal consequences for your actions, you will face when you meet your creator at the end of your life. You will be accountable for that. Now, how can you expect someone that has become a glutton, an egotistical glutton, and live their life that way? How can you expect those people to care about others when they themselves lack self-respect to care about themselves and to take responsibility and to make those choices? And I'm talking about wise choices. You know, when you don't make a choice, you're making a choice as well. You're making a choice not to make a choice. And you give away your power, you see. All the things that we are given as enticements, Drew, are disempowering. And they're given to us intentionally to keep us from knowing who we really are. I don't mean to sound like I'm going off on a rant.
No, you're fine, man. This is your show. My only answer is I can answer to God with clean hands. That I've done my due diligence to stand up and prepare people. People who stop living the way they believed on and start believing the way they live, constantly, I hear this from individuals that state in all kinds of capacities, Drew, you're categorically crazy. You're unrealistic. It's impossible. It's irresponsible. It's futile for us to be preparing with what you say. Ladies and gentlemen, I bring you solutions on my own radio show. I listen to Don Nikoloff. I listen to other shows on BBS. Constantly bringing survival, knowledge, and the attitude of don't stop. Forget about yesterday. Prepare for tomorrow. Don't stop. Don't give up. It is realistic. It is possible to take responsibility and understand that you can manifest yourself into being a better person and networking with others. You can have all the money in the world and be nothing but dirt in the hole that will put you in. And who cares if you've got all the money? If you didn't help anybody. I went looking around, Don, and I saw the other day there was a massive, massive funeral for one of the wealthiest men in Arkansas burial. And I thought to myself, God, you know, here's a guy that has, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 people go to his funeral. And people at that funeral thinking that they're blessing his memory by showing up. But here's one of the richest people in the state of Arkansas that's nothing but dirt. And could he take the money with him? He had the opportunity to help veterans, fellow veterans that he served with in World War II, veterans from the Korean War that he could have easily assisted, veterans from Vietnam, but instead, he chose to hoard the money. And as a multimillionaire, he died. He's left his spirit. He's left his flesh body. Now he's in the spirit. And people were saying in printed words and whispering amongst themselves that he had a lot of friends. No, he did not.
Those people were probably there just to be seen, just in case they were in a
film. Yes.
You know?
It was hobnobbing around with the fellow rich. And people don't understand why Drew wouldn't even go to the funeral for his own grandmother. It's not that I didn't respect my grandmother. I loved my grandmother. I would have given my life for my mother and my grandmother. But I learned many years ago when I helped them in life. And they knew it. They knew that I was not going to be there to bury them because their spirit wasn't there. It was just dirt. I love my mother and I love my grandmother. And when they died, I prayed over them. But I wasn't going to pray over a shell. And I didn't need to go out and honor them in their dirt just to make others feel good. I have members of my family that think I'm an evil person because I wouldn't go. And I said, wait a minute here. I don't need to tell my mother and my grandmother that I love them or show you guys the respect that I had for my mother and grandmother. That's private between my mother and my grandmother. I gave them more respect in life than all of you put together. I would go out of my way 200 miles a weekend to visit my mother. Yeah, a lot of times it was just to sit there in a lounge chair. But just going home and sitting in the lounge chair in front of the idiot box and falling asleep with my schnauzer gave my mother a peace of mind.
Yeah, you showed you cared.
Exactly. I had a sister that would drive by her within a half a mile. I wouldn't even say a half a mile. Within a quarter of a mile of our mother's home. And our mother would not see that sister for 3 or sometimes 4 weeks at a time. She'd talk to her on the phone at least every other day. But that sister wouldn't take time out to stop by and see her own mother because she had her own family. I can remember when my mother had her family. But she always took time to go see my grandmother, her granny, her mother. My mother always took time out of her life to make sure that I was around my father's mother. And would visit and stay overnight with my father's mother anytime I wanted. But today, people take their kids and hoard them in their houses and the kids don't even know who their grandparents are. Except at Christmas. And how many people are educating their sons and daughters and their mothers and fathers about the travesties that are coming to the soil. We have the tea parties, and then everybody says, "Ah, the masses are waking up." 2 million people walked to Washington, D.C., yet the other 298 million Americans did not stand up and shout and scream at the mass media for their failure to report it.
A few of the ones that attended the Tea Party did, too.
And how about those that did attend in Washington? What happened to them? Why didn't they get up and scream? Here we go again on December the 15th of this month. How many people out there know about the rally on December the 15th? That is coming forth, that they're spreading the word about. I have heard very little mention of it, if any, on Informational Freedom Network. Yet, I've got friends in Australia that know about it. I got friends in Sochi, Russia that know about it. I got friends in Northern Ireland that know about it. In Scotland, in Wales, in London, in Munich, in Rota, Spain, in Thistle, Italy. They all know about the fact that there is a major march being planned for December the 15th. Newspapers around the world carry more information about the truth going into the United States than the newspapers in America. And you hit the nail on the head earlier, Don, making the very salient point about people more interested in their daily life than the truth. They're more interested in the, the travesties of the rich and famous. In 6 short months, we move from the death of Michael Jackson, and it's still in the papers. They're still talking about it because he's got a record out there. And as the waning days of the Michael Jackson saga start to end, then all of a sudden they bring out the travesties of Tiger Woods, and you hear it in dated. Tiger Woods has a problem. I don't need to read it in the dadgum newspaper every day about Tiger Woods and his infidelity, immorality. I don't need to hear the travesties of a congressman or a senator constantly who's been out of office for 10 years, and all of a sudden, 10 years out of office, him and his wife are breaking up because he's having an affair with the upstairs maid. 25 years junior to his oldest son. Whoa! He has a son that's 50, and he's 75, and he's sleeping with the upstairs maid who's 26. As a prostitute, he's paying her off. I don't care. He's been out of office. You know, that's none of my business. That's a family affair here in Arkansas. And I don't need to read it in the paper every damn day.
Oh, but, you know, Drew, you see the hypocrisy in the media, and they're puppets. So who is orchestrating all this, you see? The truth about Michael Jackson being a behind-the-scenes business partner with George H.W. Bush, to being part of the pedophile ring, to being part of and a victim himself, and I'm speaking about, well, both of them play a role in MK Ultra, mind control, and all of a sudden now everyone is using Michael Jackson's music. Do you know at professional sporting events that they specialize during timeouts and halftime and at the beginning of the event and at the closing of the event, they play music of pedophiles?
Yes, I know. That's okay. Why I don't watch them.
Yeah, and I bring that point up because most people, you know, they're tapping their feet and dancing around and clapping their hands, and they're totally oblivious to what's being done to their subconscious mind. See?
And they wouldn't even bother to listen to this stuff last year, especially on Michael Jackson, right after the criminal activity came forth of this pedophilia. It was like you couldn't have a radio station wouldn't even play any of his top hits. Now
he was detestable, was he not? He was hated.
And now it's like he's the golden boy on radio.
Oh, see, they're justifying all the perversion. You see, they're justifying, and that's the hypocrisy there. The media
and the real hypocrisy, Don, is the DJs that have the microphone don't bother to stand up. There's a movie out there that I fell on the floor when I first saw it, and yet my mother and I saw it together on a 52-inch big screen TV that I bought for her because she was going blind at the time, and she's sitting up pretty darn close to it, and I'm kind of set off to the side looking at it at the angle, and I'm flabbergasted that in the depiction of this movie, the news anchor is reading the script, stands up, throws the paper on the desk on live television in this particular movie set, and in the unedited version, she says a few foul words. I'm not going to read this blankety blank manure. I will use the term manure. And I've had enough. And walks off the camera. And the male newscaster sits there flabbergasted and makes some commentary BS. And my mother turns and looks at me and she says, "It's going to be like that in the future." And I look back at her and I says, "You saw it." She says, "Oh, I see it all the time. They read from scripts and they're lying through their teeth." And the name of the movie was RoboCop.
Mm-hmm.
We have salient movies out there that very succinctly bring forth the truth, but people don't see the morality of the pitch, the honor that's given to women. How many people watched the movie Quigley Down Under and saw the underlying morale and the morality and the respect for women and the disrespect of women? It was there. The moral of the story was the murder. It's not good to murder. The full moral of the entire movie was that man needs to understand that his fellow man has got different colors, has different lifestyles. And yet, when you have moral men from one continent meeting up with moral men of another continent, they can be together as friends and unite together against a common enemy. At the very end of Quigley Down Under, Quigley is faced off McMasters, who owns the big ranch there in Australia and hires convicts for laborers, and he shoots three of them down with his six shooter, with the common comment that I didn't have a use for a pistol. I never said I could use it. And in rides the British, the Toon, on horseback, led by a major, and they surround Quigley, three-quarters of the way, half-moon, pull their rifles out, en masse, aiming at one man who's ready to die for honor. Because McMaster's was slaughtering the indigenous people of Australia. He stood up against that man. And the indigenous men of Australia knew what was going on, and the Aborigines surrounded the ranch house far off in thousands. And the actor did a darn good performance of showing his fear, but nothing like what the fear would have, should have been in real life if the story had been real. The moral was of the entire story, the entire entertainment, is men can unite and live free against the tyrants, against the elitists. It's been depicted over and over and over again, very saliently by writers who write the entertainment, whether it be on the big screen or the little screen, whether it be in Perry Mason or West Side Story. Life goes on, but are you prepared to help your fellow man? Are you prepared, those of you that are really well off, to help those that are on BBS radio, to get the word out there, to keep the word going? How many of you have looked? There's 179 broadcasters on Blog Talk Radio. There's at least a dozen on BBS radio every day, putting out the truth. And yet, who gets support? I'll tell you who gets support. It's those that are utilizing the Informational Freedom Network for their own personal greed and brag about it, because they're grabbing news headlines, putting together, much like myself, much like my own News and Views, slapping on a web page, and sit down and write some minuscule article about something that doesn't mean a hell of beans, and they call themselves a writer, an investigator, a prolific individual putting forth the truth, and brag about receiving a $5,000 donation, and the donation is $5,000 if the rest of you guys can donate $5,000. And they're asking for donations just to get up to the $5,000 so they can get another $5,000 from a donor. Don Nikoloff, I don't know how much it takes for you and your lifestyle. $5,000 could feed me and pay all my bills for almost a full year. And when I say almost, I mean 11 full months.
The first thing that comes to my mind, Drew, when I think about that, is how I can help people with that $5,000.
And I, yes. And what that $5,000 can do to help the military men that are sleeping under viaducts. And I'll tell you, ladies and gentlemen, we've got Americans that are going hungry. I use the knowledge of helping others. I don't need money to help others. I find stores that are willing to give away clothes to homeless men at the shelter if they're asked. I found four restaurants that were once throwing away all of their food because it was cooked and there was no way to put it in an icebox and they didn't serve food later. Throwing it away in droves. I mean, we're talking about baskets of food. One of them was a Subway shop. Throwing away over 30 pounds of bread a night. 30 pounds of bread. I found a restaurant, a fast food restaurant, churches, that was throwing away 10 to 20 pounds of fried chicken a night. And I said, wait a minute, you know, this can, you don't need to do this. Would you give it to the homeless shelter group if I could get somebody to come over and pick it up? Well, we're not going to keep it overnight. They'll have to be out here when we close down at midnight. I said, that's fine. Well, we're not going to put it in any special bags or anything. I said, that's fine. We'll bring you some food-grade plastic restaurant bags. You put the food in the restaurant bag, and I'll have somebody out there at midnight to pick it up. And sure enough, 7 years later, I've got four Subway shops donating cooked bread that they don't use, and three Church's Fried Chicken giving away the chicken they don't use to a homeless shelter. Granted, the food is over 18 hours old when it's warmed back up and fed to these guys, but there was nothing wrong with the food.
Better than digging it out of a trash bin or a dumpster.
And you're right, Don. You know, the most miserable thing, the sickening thing that I ever saw was when I was walking my schnauzer one day when we had been out driving around in my convertible. It was nice and sunny and hot. And I had to drop by the bank, and I hadn't had an opportunity to let her do her walk and relieve herself and bowel movement. And we were at the bank, and she was just getting antsy. I could see that she was ready to hold. She couldn't hold her legs much longer. And we were a good 3 miles from home. So I put a leash on her and started walking her around the bank. And I heard this rattling over by the dipsy dumpster. And I go over there, and I see stacks of food set off on the ground and other things nicely stacked. And what the heck is going on? And inside the dipsy dumpster was a young man, about 25 to 30 years old, scrounging through the dipsy dumpster that was located next to it wasn't a fast food restaurant, it was a convenience store that had fast food service inside that cooked fried chicken, biscuits, and other things. And he was going through the dipsy dumpster pulling out stuff they had thrown away to eat. That upset me to no end. Food that my own schnauzer wouldn't even eat. He was digging out of the trash can to eat. That's how desperate America is going to come, Don, in the very near future. And we aren't networking enough to each other. It's like I was saying, $5,000 could help me out for a whole year. But what can $5,000 do for a shelter that's helping men and women that are homeless? Or a female shelter out there that women are being abused in homes, where the men treat them like dirt. We have a shelter here in Little Rock where women go to get away from abusive men. There's a movie out there called Sleeping with the Enemy. I visited this shelter, and I didn't find one woman, or two, or three, or four. I found a crowded building that was converted over to one-bedroom cubicles throughout the business, the building that used to be small one-room offices that had double beds in them where a wife and two or three kids would hold up in a very, very unpleasant surrounding. $5,000 to that shelter could really go a long way. And it has. A group of Marines got together and put together $50,000, and they put together a really nice place that looked more like a hotel 15 years ago. But it takes somebody to get involved, to come forth and say, hey, look, I can, I'm a real estate broker. I can help raise money, but I don't want to give it to you if you're going to house these women in this disparaging place. But it's better than living in a $200,000 mansion and getting beat up because the towels aren't exactly right in the bathroom, or the cans aren't turned exactly right in the kitchen, or the kids come home and their fingernails are dirty. And I didn't know at that time that that's why those women were in that shelter. But that shelter was not any place that I would really want to live in as a little boy on the run from an abusive father who wouldn't take no for an answer and rape his own wife. Or abuser.
I annually donate time performing music for fundraising events for such a place. And for these women, these are like what a halfway house is to an alcoholic or a drug addict. And it provides them with a safe place to hide. But you see, they're not free. They're hiding. They're getting some counseling. They're able to talk to some people. And this is real counseling. This is counseling from someone that has been through the exact same thing.
And you know, Don, the travesty here is that these women are hiding inside a city in which the evil man that they're running from is walking the streets looking for them.
Yeah.
They are in fear of being seen at McDonald's or seen at the grocery store. They're constantly looking over their shoulder, worried that he's going to walk in that store or walk into that mall. I mean, to me, I gave the suggestion to the maitre d' or the matron of the home after the home got built, and it was converted from what it had. From the shelter it had that would house only 35 women. 35! To a really nice place that would hold over 100. But it wasn't the full solution, Don. And I told the matron. And I told the governor. I don't need platitudes. I don't need to stand on a platform to say that I donated $10,000 to get this thing on the roll. I don't need those kind of platitudes. And neither do you. And neither does anybody else out there. It's helping your fellow man when they're distraught and out of place. But the problem that I saw, I said, wait a minute. Why don't you get together as Little Rock and network with places like Springfield, Missouri, and Memphis, Tennessee, and Tulsa, Oklahoma, in Shreveport, Louisiana. Cities of like stature, of like backgrounds, of like diversity, all within an 8-hour drive maximum. And the women that are going through the same travesties in Tulsa have a choice to unite in places as far away as Memphis. And the women in Memphis can go as far, go back to Tulsa, or from Springfield to Little Rock or Shreveport. The women that are being abused in Memphis, I mean in Little Rock, could go to any of the others and kind of commingle to get them out of the fear of seeing their former spouse, who's basically a wife beater.
Well, you know, I'm agreeing with everything you're saying. What comes to mind is the fact that this is allowed to go on. This is allowed to occur, you see, because there's a lot of money made off of it.
Exactly. There you go. They'll put a man or a woman in jail for not having a driver's license, or not having their papers in the car, or refusing to register their car, or refusing to buy the socialist mandated insurance. They'll put those people in jail, but they won't go out there and put a man that is known to be a violent offender against a sex. I mean, if, ladies and gentlemen, you haven't seen anything till you see a man that's 6 foot tall beat up a 5 foot tall woman. A man that's 6 foot tall and weighs 250 pounds pounce on a woman that's 5 foot tall and barely weighs 110 pounds and beat her to a pulp.
In front of the kids.
In front of the kids.
Or while he's beating the kids. Or abusing them in other ways.
I walked into that scenario as a real estate broker in Southwest Arkansas. Walked in and the man was bringing his right hand down on this little woman. And I say I walked in, the door was wide open. There was no screen door. The door was open. There was a sign out front that said, mobile home for sale by owner. It was 25 miles outside of Little Rock. I'm out looking at other properties, and I just visited one of my electronic customers and repaired their satellite system. And I saw this sign. I said, I'm going to stop. I'm going to see what this is. This looks like a nice place. It's, you know, a mobile home sits on about, looked like what approximately was at least an acre. And as I walked up to the house, I saw the sign more clearly. It says mobile home in 5 acres for sale by owner being transferred. And wow. And I heard a scream and I ran to the door. And here's this guy as big as I am, pouncing on this Russian girl. I later found out she was from Russia, literally beating the snot out of her. And how many times he had hit her before I got there, I don't know. But I ran inside the house, grabbed his arm, threw him up against the wall, and proceeded to give him the riot act. It told him that if I ever heard of him hitting her again, I personally would file the charges of witnessing the brutality of beating up this woman. This little 5 foot, beautiful 5 foot tall woman, barely weighed 100 pounds. But she was so scared because she didn't have another place to go. And she would allow him to beat up on her when he'd go through his travesties. Because she didn't want to go back to Russia. She didn't know that the government of Arkansas would protect her. She found out over the next few weeks. It's sad that it has to take somebody like me to get involved. I'm outspoken. What's really sad is the neighbor, totally across the street, had witnessed it. Literally witnessed this man beat up this woman on several occasions. It took me 9 months to get that man arrested and charged and the woman out of that situation. And when it all came down to it, we got her moved in with her sister in Seattle. And she didn't have to go back to Russia 17 years ago. I got involved with battered women. Here we are, 17 years later, and I'm involved in a bigger fight, and that is right here. We, the American people, are the battered person, and the government is the individual beating up on us. They loaned billions of dollars to banks 6 and 7 months ago, and yet people were in awe to find out today that here's Bank of America that's going to pay back $17 billion to the United States Treasury for the money that they borrowed in their TARP money just a few short 4 months. They made $17 billion profit. And where is that money going back into? It's going back into the general fund. It's basically the government has just stole money from we the people through some form of sleight of hand, utilizing their culpable banksters because the people couldn't get, the people were not going to let Congress have $17 billion. To spend whatever they want. But now that it goes back into the general coffers, Nazi Pelosi now has enough money to pay for her plane ride from D.C. to San Fran at a cost of $500,000 a week, a month.
Yeah, they use that money as their personal piggy bank, you know.
Exactly.
Congressmen and senators.
And where are we at today? We're overburdened with taxes, overburdened with laws. 200 years ago, Don, if you go back and if you're astute enough, you want to go back and investigate, look at all the laws that the United States of America had in general laws for the public, and look at the individual republic states and the general laws of the republic states under their constitutions. You will find that basically they were wrapped around the laws of the Bible and the Ten Commandments. Do we really need any more laws?
No.
Just a short 110 years ago, Don, the entire law book that a lawyer needed, United States Code, was in a book not much bigger than an unabridged dictionary. An unabridged dictionary of the day was probably about 5 inches thick on 8x10 paper in hardbound. I have one. Today, the laws of the United States, United States Code, encompass over 83 books. Each book, a minimum of 3 inches thick. If you measure it from hardbound cover to hardbound cover. Do we really need all the laws? Can we live with less? Yes. Are we going to live with less? Yes. We're going to return to the law of the land in the very near future, and people are saying they're preparing. And I'm going to wrap up for your show, Don. They listen to you. They listen to me. They listen to other shows on BBS radio. And they buy this, or they buy that, or they support this dude that needs this money, or they buy these seeds from this guy that sells seeds for 100 times more than what he pays for them. But they don't bother to try to grow anything. They don't utilize the knowledge that you and I bring forth for survival. They've got the seeds packed over to the side. They've got the canned foods, the freeze-dried food, the Berkey water filter. And I'm not trying to promote the Berkey water filter, ladies and gentlemen. It's just the easiest one to talk about. There's better units out there. Cheaper units out there. There's less expensive ways to make and purify water. But do you know how to use it? If I give you the schematic, have you tried to make it work? Have you built a fire in your own backyard in downtown LA and made distilled water with your pressure cooker? Have you opened up a can of pre-cooked beef to see what it tastes like, to see how to cook with it, or what you can do with it? Have you made a homemade loaf of bread from scratch without milk? Have you sat back and utilized a fire starter kit? Have you prepared yourself with warm clothes for the winter that's raging across North America right now in the northern part of the United States, where temperatures are 9 degrees below zero? Have you gone outside and lived in the tent that you've got? Prepare to live in a tent at 9 degrees below zero. Wherever you are, have you prepared yourself to live off the land and off the food and know what's out there? Do you know how to prepare dandelion leaves to make a tea, or dandelion root to make a coffee? Or did you even know that you could do so? Don, the time for learning is fast becoming a time for exercising what you learned. And if you don't take heed, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to be left behind fighting in the cities, and you're going to see hoodlums, gangs, literally carving up people's legs to eat them. Don't take my word for it. All you got to do is see what happened in Poland in World War II, or Moscow in World War I, or Xinjiang in the Qin Dynasty. It's a travesty, ladies and gentlemen, an extreme tragedy. And because of the lack of due diligence on your part, the listeners of this show, where in every clime, in every place, Wind Talkers Radio brings this show out there around the world. And people in America have got apathy and don't care, or think they're prepared when they've got a pistol and one box of ammo. If you haven't got 1,000 rounds of ammunition, you can't fight me in one good firefight. That's all I got to say, Don. We got to wrap it up.
Yes, we do, Drew, but well said. I want to ask you a question in closing here, rather than me make a comment.
And I got an answer, but you may not like it.
I've never asked you this question before on the air. And my motivation for asking is because of the perception that those out there that think they've got all the answers themselves, and these are the ones that are just what you could call balcony cheerleaders or balcony observers. The ones that listen to the message and then have something else to say about a totally different topic because they can't wrap their mind around one particular topic at a time, especially the one being discussed. They have to bring up a different topic. And at the same time, which is, to me, very egocentrical, number one, those people are just concerned about themselves, which they're entitled to be, but they come out and they judge those of us that are considering ourselves messengers. Now, if we are messengers, just like a postman or postwoman is a messenger, they're delivering something that you or someone else sent to be taken to another person. They're charged with that responsibility. That is when they do it. They actually do the job. But you are a messenger, and you're not being paid to deliver this message. And if you had your own choice, and I know how you're going to answer this, but I want to give you the opportunity to answer this as briefly as you can, as to where does this motivation come from? What drives Drew Raines or any messenger of the truth? What is behind that person risking their life, sacrificing sleep, sacrificing the daily comforts of life, sacrificing anything that others would consider essential to their existence? What drives you? What force drives you?
Love for truth and honesty and justice and morale. Loyalty above everything except honor.
And where does that really come from? Ultimately, where does that come from?
My belief in God the Father, in Jesus, Yeshua the Christ. My family, my mother, my father, my grandfather, my great-grandfather who died in the streets of Cotton Valley, Louisiana, protecting the bank holdings in a shootout. My great-great ancestors who have fought in the Revolutionary War, the War of Northern Aggression, the French-Indian Wars. All the way back, there has been a member of my family that has stood up for right. Even in the invasion of England, there you will find ancestors from my family tree with William the Conqueror taking over England because it was such a savage nation in and of itself. Taking it all the way back to the Armenian family. And all the time, in everything I saw, my ancestors fought for honor, for truth, for justice, so other people could live free or with morals. And it was always fighting against the tyrants of the elite for a better way of life for those that didn't have it. Many people look to me today as being poor, and yet I am so rich with friends that my friends call me from all parts of the United States, from all parts of the world. True, there's a bedroom here for you to come live with us when times get tough. True, there's a spare barn here that has a loft that's got your name on it, that we can convert into a master room for you and your girl or your wife or just you. I get these stories, and people like the gentleman today that I befriended down in Florida, who's fighting the Internal Revenue Service against atrocities that just blows me away, who talked to me and says, "You sound like a man of about 35. I'm not 35, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not going to go quietly in the night. I'm a Vietnam veteran. Obviously, that puts me well over the 55 age group. I don't collect any benefits from the government at this time. And I don't see I'm going to be able to. I'm not going to go down and sign my rights away to keep and bear arms so I can draw a $2,700 a month pension from the government because of Agent Orange inflictions. I don't need the money that bad. I believe in personal responsibility. I've learned square foot gardening. I can live like my grandfather lived with no government intrusion. My passion is for my fellow man, for my God, for truth, for honor, for loyalty and respect. We're a world of people, of many races, of many cultures, of many beliefs. And why can't we live together? I know people on four continents. Personally, know people. Friends on four continents. And ladies and gentlemen, we're all the same. Some of us have a darker skin. Some of us have a lighter skin. Some of us are tall and big. And some of us are short and thin. Some of us wear clothes from head to toe. And some of us wear just a sampling around the waist. And nothing from waist up, male or female. And yet, I have respect for the lifestyle of which those people are born and raised and live in. I'm not going to go quietly in the night. I'm going to fight until they put me in the dirt. And then I'm going to be thankful for that, because then I will be with Michael and I will be fighting the perdition directly. Because this is the time that we're fighting not in the flesh, but we're fighting for our souls, for eternity. Is that a good enough answer for you?
Yeah, actually, you know, the word good means akin to God, and you were describing godly qualities. And those that would attack you or any messenger of the truth are merely signaling, demonstrating their own ignorance and their own conceit and their jealousy, you see, because if they have a better message, then get a show and get a big one, make it a big one. If your message is that important, then you should have it in you to prove yourself right about the charges that you bring about to make others' lives miserable.
Let me add something, if I may.
Yes.
Please. I didn't choose this activity of being a talk show host.
That's what I was getting at.
I got into being a talk show host because I was adamant, extremely passionate, calling into talk shows such as Officer Jack McLam, Frank Whalen, shows on GCN, Republic Broadcast Network, The American Voice Radio, Truth Radio, I was a guest on Diane Silverman's show in 1992, bringing forth the fact that L.A. is interwoven with a number of tunnels that water runs off in, and people don't understand that you can drive an SUV through those suckers at 30 miles an hour and not have to worry about running into anybody except maybe some engine that's down there. But you could take three SUVs side by side in many of those water runoffs and drive them at 60 miles an hour. You could hide a tank underneath L.A. and people wouldn't know it was there.
Mm-hmm.
That was in 1992. People don't talk about those things.
Yeah.
And I got onto these shows, and Jack McLamb calls me up one day after he had a mild heart attack, and he says, can you do my show this week for me for a couple of days? Yes. I'd be proud to. I did two shows for him. Frank Whalen calls me up and says, Drew, I've got a four-hour show, and I've got a family problem. Can you take it over? I'm making arrangements. Can you do tomorrow's show for me? It's a Friday. It's a call-in show. Starts at 6 a.m., goes off at 10 a.m. In less than 6 hours, I put together guests from five continents. A call from Australia, two callers from South America, a caller from England, and a caller from Armenia. Wrapped them up. It did a four-hour show on Republic Broadcasting Network. I don't know what Republic did with the archive. I've got that archive show on a CD here. And I did that show not because I wanted to get on radio. I did the show because Frank Whalen was a personal friend of mine, and I would do anything to help him out. This young 28-year-old at that time, 7 years ago, or 6 years ago. At that time, 6 years ago, he was 28 years old, and he was such a young, astute talk radio show host who could pick up a newspaper and dissect it and give it out to the people and tell people what the real truth was behind the news. I admired the man. I ended up doing another show for him, and to my knowledge, I'm the only person that he's ever asked to sit in and do his show as his guest, I mean as his host, substituting for his show.
Mm-hmm.
Jack McLamb asked me several times, which I did do, and then he surrendered his show to me when he left the American Voice Radio, and I picked up his show on American Voice Radio that was 1 hour, expanded it to two, and then was summarily dismissed because I was attacking others that were advertising on all of the informational radio networks and their travesty and sales of products that were outrageously out of place and out of date. And I don't mind telling you, it was a company that was selling seeds. And the man was advertising seeds. Buy these seeds for $178 and you can plant and grow 5,000 pounds of food.
Yeah, you've shared.
And it was, you looked at the seeds, and it was 10 seeds or 10 forms of vegetables. Two of the forms of seeds were two different varieties of watermelons. Two of the seeds were two different varieties of cantaloupes. But was there real nourishment in all the seeds that he was selling? No. And I found out that, hey, wait a minute, you can call the Victory Seed Garden Seed Company, and they would sell you $78, they would sell you 100 different varieties of seeds, pole beans, beets, squash, tomatoes, watermelon, cantaloupe, carrots, spinach, and I got summarily dismissed. And I thought, well, okay, well, I'm not getting paid for this. It was fine. It was while it lasted. It's time to move on. And all of a sudden, I got phone calls from Australia, from Armenia, from Russia, from Ireland, from Venezuela, from Louisiana, from Arizona, say, Drew, we want you on the radio. We'll put together dial-ups if you'll go on the radio and just get some, keep your voice out there. That was in September a year ago. And one thing led to another. And then we found one of the micro broadcasters in North Dakota had been picking up stations on Blog Talk Radio, and they says, hey, Drew, you know, check this out. You get on Blog Talk Radio, and you won't have to pay that $500 a month to get on Shoutcast to put an internet radio service up, or $250 a month for their low-band Shoutcast. And one thing led to another. And all of a sudden, we've got 178 independently owned, privately operated radio stations around the world on five continents. And I'm just a voice. Sometimes I'm irate. Sometimes I rant. Sometimes I scream. Sometimes I get abuses back to me, and I tell everybody, there's a button up there. If you don't like what I got to say, turn it off. There's a dial on the right, turn the channels. Because everything I bring forth to the radio, I document. It's there in print from somewhere. Somebody has printed it and wrote it. All I'm trying to do is to shake, rattle, and roll. Thank you, Don.
My pleasure. You touched on a lot of very meaningful topics tonight, Drew, and I want to thank you for being on Evident Footprints, and I hope that people consider, you know, what we've talked about, that we're not talking down to people. We're delivering a message the best way we know how, and sometimes it's an unpleasant thing to do, because I'm sure you, like me, can think of some things that you would prefer to do with your life, with your own time, but there comes a time when it's evident that somebody has to grab the bull by the horns or take the reins, whatever analogies you want to use, to providing some sort of leadership and some sanity and a pathway for the truth to flow through. And that's what we do. You do that on your show five nights a week, or late afternoons, we'll say.
And, wait a minute, it's five nights a week in Sochi, Russia.
Yeah, yeah. And depending on where one is, of course. And you do a lot to, you know, help promote my show and other shows, other writers out there, journalists. You've been with Bob Chapman, what, 4 years now?
4 years and 2 months.
Yeah.
3 months, excuse me, 4 years and 3 months today.
So you cover the whole gamut, what I'm saying. But the bottom line is that on some other level, and it's not a question of whether or not someone else knows what that is. That's your personal relationship with your creator, who happens to be the same creator that I answer to, see? As a truth teller, as a truth messenger, you rock and roll, like you said, shake, rattle, and roll, and you just have to do it. And it's not about your ego.
It's not about money.
It's not about money, okay? And you know, there are those that are in a position to help you or someone that's in need of the help. All we want, all we ask people to do is to listen to the message, and if it resonates, do some research, network with people, share the information, join in prayer, take a leadership role. You want to see something get done in your life, you have to do it. And it begins with you, each and every one of you. That's what's going to bring this country back. That's what's going to save the world. And those are words that are not appreciated by those that are intent upon destroying it. But nevertheless, that's part of our duty as messengers, to deliver the message that we're given.
And you know you're doing something right when they attack you and not your message.
Yes, exactly. Because they know the message can't be attacked. It's the truth.
Right. And they destroy your friendship with people that you care about. People that, it's hard. I mean, in our personal case, meaning you and me, we lost the friendship of Mary Ann Ponder through murder. And yet, the elitists were able to cover it up and post it off as another form of death. And yet, we know the truth.
And Don Harkins, too.
And we looked at Don Harkins and the use of what instrument killed him, murdered him, I shouldn't say kill him, murdered him. And last week, Jesse Ventura ran the article or did a one-hour show on a harp. And then last night he did a show on 9/11. And I fear for Jesse Ventura. They may take him down. How? In an airplane crash or a car accident. And make it look like it's an accident when it was murder. They attack the person because they can't attack the message.
Mm-hmm.
And Don, you do a fantastic job of bringing forth people like Jim tomorrow night in his astute observation and patent and process on creating electricity. And others out there, Kenneth Dachi, who's got one of the best informational websites for truth. Your ability to unite these people is, like I tell people on my show, Don Nikoloff is the Thomas Paine of the 21st century. And I'm proud to be on your show, Don.
Well, I'm proud to have you on. That's why you're on. And the demand is there. The listeners ask. You know, they want it.
I'm just one more Marine out there that's not going to go quietly in the night, and I'm proud that other people ask me or ask you to keep me on or bring me back.
Well, I'm glad you won't go quietly in the night, because if you were to, we wouldn't have this radio show. Drew, we're out of time. I got to say goodnight to the audience, but I want to thank you, okay?
And I want to thank BBS Radio for allowing this rant to go forth. I pray that you guys are blessed with all that you do out there, and the fact that maybe your lives can live a little better because people like Don Nikoloff and myself bringing forth the truth so your listeners can expand their lives and their knowledge. Thank you, Don.
You're welcome, Drew. Thank you, and I look forward to seeing you on Evident Footprints again next week. So you have yourself a great rest of the week, and maybe we'll be talking before too long, you and me.
Question, before you go, the 24th of December, are we going to do a show?
It's my plan to.
Thank you. Larissa, you heard him.
I don't.
He said yes.
Yeah, I don't celebrate pagan holidays as a... You know, a necessity.
Okay, that's great. Neither do I. So I just wanted I wanted it out there in verbiage so the girls would know that, yes, they're planning to broadcast that day.
Okay, and I guess I should tell Larissa and Bobby and all the other girls out there that we love you for all the hard work that you're doing and in helping me with my show as well. I really appreciate it, and I pray that you guys get blessed, that it gets easier for you as time goes on.
By the way, I do have one big platitude for you is from the girls in Russia. They wish to thank you for bringing on the singer from England that you had that sang jazz.
Oh, that was Julie Dennis, yes.
They were just really appreciative of that show.
We're going to have her on again. Julie's doing some recording. She's very creative and very busy right now, but we're going to get her on. She'll probably be on early January.
Okay.
Okay. Drew, I'm going to say goodnight. We'll talk soon. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, as well as on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world and on BlogTalkRadio.com on the Internet. Special thanks to those two networks, as well as to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, and, of course, my guest tonight, Drew Malone Raines III. Visit his website at amd-elequity.com, or is that dot? amd.elequity.com. And to all you out there in the listening audience, I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.